We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hey everyone, before we get into today's pod, I want to tell you about Blue Wire Hustle, a brand new program where you can host your very own podcast here at Blue Wire. Hustle was created to give everyone the opportunity to take your podcast to the next level. Or if you want to host a podcast and just don't know where to start, Hustle's the perfect place for you. As part of the program, you'll receive personal cover art, Q&As with Blue Wire's top podcasters, access to our community Discord, and e-learning courses full of tips and tricks. And on top of that, we'll help you get your show out to Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, and all other listening platforms. And the best part? It's only $15, the same rate as any other hosting site would charge you just for the initial setup. So whether you're starting from scratch or have an existing show that you want to grow, Hustle's an open door to leveling up your sports experience. Acceptance in the program is limited, so get your application in today. To apply, go to bwhustle.com/join. Check out the description box for this episode to find out more. But that's bwhustle.com/join.
Blue Wire.
All right, Jack, you good to go?
Yeah, mate.
All right. Oh, shit, 1 second. What is up, Nets fans? Welcome to the Brooklyn Buzz. I'm Nick Faye. With me, as always, Jack Manuel. Jack, how are we doing?
Pain. Only pain.
It was a painful loss for the Nets. 123-122 to the Washington Wizards. Man, they had a chance to win it at the end. A shot from Kyrie Irving, a shot from Kevin Durant. You know, the KD shot is one that we typically like. Kyrie, maybe, you know, pull up three, not ideal in that situation. But before we get into it, as always, you can find us on all streaming platforms, including OTGBasketball.com, NetsRepublic.com, and Blue Wire Pods. But, Jack, what were your thoughts on the final shot from Kyrie Irving? Well, the second shot.
Why do you take a three? Like, why settle? Like, you can get to your spot. You don't need to take one of the hardest shots you can take in basketball, the pull-up three, when you have time on the clock and you can get to your spots, play a little bit, look for, like, you know, get to your area, get a little bit closer, drive on them. Yeah, we weren't getting a lot of calls tonight, although we're getting late calls, but it was a bad shot. And, like, you know, not to quote Paul George, but it was a bad shot.
Yeah, it was a rough shot. And even the fact, I didn't like the idea of taking it from full court either. My mind of thinking is, do you try to get that shot up as fast as possible because you want to continue to extend the game? The Nets happen to get the offensive rebound, but let's hypothetically say Washington got it. You can still foul in that situation. You're only down one, and then you have a chance to tie the game on another possession. So I didn't like the time management aspect, you know, separately. And then the shot, again, like you said, Jack, being a three in that situation, why? Like, what's the point? And it's also like, Washington doesn't have five quality defenders. Like, I don't recall who was on the floor in that situation, but I'm going to assume Westbrook was one of those guys. You know what I mean? Like, everybody on I don't really know of anybody on the roster I would consider a good defender. And the fact is, they couldn't even get, you know, a good shot at the end, or they settled for a three. Just it's kind of almost a perfect example of this game for the Nets.
It really is. That was just, I don't know. It was such a bad performance, yet the Nets almost won it. They didn't deserve to win this game. It was basically the superstars that almost took them over the line, and some, you know, key clutch Joe Harris buckets and some nice defensive plays at times from Jeff Green as well. But it was a poor, poor performance all around. Nick, I wanted to bring to you Bobby Marks, former Nets GM, or assistant GM, or whatever the hell he was that dumbass from ESPN, has put out a couple of things, Nick. Brooklyn is certainly talented on the offensive end by my question now, seven games into the season. Is this team tough enough? Do they have enough that wants to get their hands dirty and do the little things?
You know, as much as we give Bobby Marks a hard time, he does bring up a pretty good point. I think they lack physicality at times, and they lack some of those energy plays in which we talked about. And it's also like, you kind of hit on it. They were in this game because of their talent. Like, they were out of sorts on both ends of the floor. Like, at times, the offense just, like, they didn't know what they were doing, and they were just, like, sitting there watching each other 10 seconds into the shot clock. Like, the defense, we already know there's a million problems, but, like, the fact that the offense isn't as easy as it can be, like, yeah, they scored 122 points, but it wasn't necessarily in an easy fashion. It was like, okay, KD and Kyrie just were really good.
Yeah, and there was some times where the ball movement was better. The type of shots taken today were better. But in saying that, yeah, there was just some real just head-scratching moments. And
some of the passes we saw at the end of that third quarter, that just wasn't even NBA-level basketball. Guys were just, like, throwing the ball where they expected people to be. And it's like, yeah, I get it. It's a new team. But you should at least have some sort of vision where you're throwing the ball, right?
Yeah, I mean, turnovers killed the Nets. You know, Kyrie Irving wanted Jared Allen to give him the sort of handoff. And, you know, it's going to get the Brooklyn Nets are going to be the number one segment on First Take and every other sports talk show going forward. It's simple as that, because they're not winning basketball games. And Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant are saying things that need to be said. It's everyone else. It's not those two. Yes, Kyrie Irving shot at the end of the game deserves criticism. It was a terrible shot. It's a bad shot, as Paul George said, like I said earlier. But that wasn't the reason why we lost the game. The reason why we lost the game is because we gave up turnovers. We gave up rebounds. And I don't understand how the Nets won the rebounding battle. Like, it makes no sense to me. I think it was the offensive glass that really lost us the game, 13-7.
Yeah, I think second chance points, I want to say, was like something like 17-4. And even looking at the Wizards, they didn't shoot super well in this game. You know what I mean? Yeah. The Nets shot really well, and they lost the game, and the Wizards scored 123 points not shooting well. Like, I'll look up the final stats on that, but it was definitely not a good number for them. Yeah, 41% from the field and 36% from three. 36% from three is solid, but 41% from the field, you typically lose.
You want to know the reason why, Nick? They had 23 more shots than the Brooklyn Nets. 23 more shots. How do you get... Like, okay, so let's average that out per quarter. That's nearly six shots per quarter. That's six opportunities to score, you know, 12 points to 18 points, and yet the Nets still only lost by 1 point. You can't give up the basketball that easily. You just can't. And the activity on the glass, the defensive miscommunications, there was just so many things that went wrong tonight. The only things that went right were, I don't know what went right tonight. You know, KD, you know, and sometimes, and even like KD.
And even that went wrong because he only had 15 shots.
Yeah, like that's just stupid. Like, it's dumb that the best player in basketball right now has 15 shots and Kyrie Irving takes the last shot again. I said on the last pod that, you know, I thought that Kai gets a bit blinkers on, you know, in certain periods of the game. This was that again. It's like, all right, I'm going to take his time. I'm going to win it for us. And like, why as well were we taking it from full court when we could have had it the half court?
Yep.
You would have got an extra couple of seconds as well there. I mean, there's certain things, and Kai getting a runway is fine. But if you're going to take the runway, you use that momentum to get to the line or get to like 10, 12 feet, not to 25, 27 feet. I just thought that if that's going to be the case, you're better off hitting a shot in rhythm, you know, with a couple of steps and a bit more composure than stopping and propping like Damian Lillard or, you know, he's done in the past, Kyrie Irving. But it's just not a good shot. And there's a lot that went wrong tonight, Nick. And, you know, Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant made a lot of good things happen. Their passing was quite good. I thought that they were looking to get their teammates. They're looking to push the issue in a lot of respects. But down the end, down the stretch, it just...
I just don't understand. My opinion, what I would run in that situation, obviously I'm not an NBA head coach, but I would go obviously take the ball in the inbound on the other side of the floor, and I'd run a pick and pop with KD and Kyrie. Let your two best players be in action and let them make a decision. Okay, they want to switch a bigger guy into Kyrie. Cool. Kyrie's going to drive to the rim and get a shot that he likes. Oh, they want to double team Kyrie. Kevin Durant's going to get an open three. You know what I mean? Or you're going to force some type of rotation where you can get a shot that you want. I just feel like Nash was like, all right, you know, you guys do your thing instead of drawing up a play. And I get it. Like, teams like to do that when they have superstar players. But when you have two superstars, like, let them play off of each other and do something. It just doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't. It really doesn't. And, you know, the KD Steph Curry pick and roll was used very sparingly by Steve Kerr in Golden State, and we've seen it very sparingly by Steve Nash so far. But when it matters the most, you want your two best players, your two best shot makers, two of the best shot makers in the game, creating and creating for each other. You know what? All right, Kai's going to get a mismatch here, or KD's going to get a mismatch here. One of them is going to get the mismatch, whether it's KD on Russell Westbrook, or Kyrie on Russell Westbrook, or KD on Thomas Bryant, or
maybe Kyrie open three for Joe Harris. Like
it's just dumb. Like, the read and react thing that we heard at the start of the season is just like, oh man, this is just going to improve. It's going to flow so much. And you know, you want your best players to just have the impetus to make their own decisions out there on the floor. But let's run some sets, man. Like, let's just do something.
That's a lot harder to do, Jack, without Spencer Dinwiddie. Like, you could do the re-react because you have a natural passer out there. Where so now it's just kind of like forcing these guys. And like you said, sets would be nice. We saw a couple sets with the second unit. I will say that. I want to say it was in the third quarter where I think Steve Nash realized, like, hey, like, this second unit needs some help out there in terms of figuring out what they can do. Because we've talked about a little bit on the last show, like, Caris LeVert is struggling right now. And if he doesn't have it going, no one else in that second unit can create. And we've seen Torian Prince and Landry Shamet try to do it. And typically it ends up in like a turnover or a bad play.
It does. And funnily enough, Nick, those second chance points, Brooklyn's dead last heading into the game in second chance points at 20.6 per game. And that's via Bobby Marks, who's, you know, finally doing something right in relation to the Brooklyn Nets. But in saying that, we got some quotes from Steve Nash, Nick, and we can talk about the turnovers first. Steve Nash chalks, and this is by Alex Schiffer, Steve Nash chalks up the Nets turnovers to being uncharacteristic and careless. Yeah, but it's been uncharacteristic and careless for the entire season. When does it stop being uncharacteristic and careless and you need to start making an adjustment? Because then the Wizards just, like, made... They're
terrible
defense.
Them.
They killed them off it, and you're giving them 3 points. 23 points of turnovers. We had 20 of them. And it's not like it was a sort of back and forth and the Wizards were getting like 15 or something themselves. They had 7. So it's like the Nets weren't good enough defensively to force turnovers, and the Nets were giving them shots. You know, those 23 extra shots that I said at the start of the podcast, that's the key reason why the Brooklyn Nets lost. You give another team 23 extra possessions to shoot the basketball, you aren't going to win. Doesn't matter if you have Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving on your team.
Yeah, no, you're right, Jack. And even just looking at the turnovers, just look at it this way. Let's say they have 8 less turnovers and they have a more acceptable number in 12. Like, they're shooting almost 50% from the field. That's 4 more made shots. That's 8 points. You know what I mean? That's a difference in the game. And the Nets win, not easily, but they win with a little bit of a cushion. So it's just so many dynamics that are just going wrong for the Nets. And I think, you know, we've spent a lot of time talking about the defensive issues, but tonight, Washington put on full display. Like, the Nets over-switched, and they would just constantly get switches on smaller guys, be it, you know, Rui Hachimura having Joe Harris in the post, or Russell Westbrook having Landry Shamet, or Thomas Bryant getting Kyrie Irving, or whatever it might be. The amount of switches we saw in the smaller players and not getting help, it's just giving away baskets in the paint.
Len, look, there was time and time and time again. You know, it literally just kept on happening, and the Nets couldn't change it. They couldn't figure out how to do it.
58 paint points.
It's a lot. It's a lot. And then it's an scenario you don't want to give up points in any sort of respect of the word, especially to Russell Westbrook. You know, that's where they are an inside-out team. That's they're not going to take the mid-range. I mean, Russell Westbrook will take some poor shots, and he did tonight. But, you know, he missed a lot, but he didn't miss the ones that mattered in the final quarter. You know, he was big then, and, you know, he was bitching like he likes to do, and he got a lot of calls that he probably shouldn't have got, but, you know, he made the refs make those call, and I don't know. You know, I put it on Twitter, and I stand by it. You know, replace the Landry Shamet minutes with Bruce Brown. You know, at the very least, if Landry Shamet's giving you nothing offensively, then Bruce Brown's going to give you nothing offensively and something defensively, at the very least. It just...
I think he'd be more likely to help on the boards, too, just given his physicality. You know what I mean? I don't have his rebounding numbers in front of me, but Bruce Brown seems like a guy that would be down to get in the dirty business. You know what I mean?
Yeah, look, and I think that Kevin Durant continues to set the tone there. That's one thing that him and Jared Allen deserve a lot of credit for. They're really showing desire and effort there. But, you know, Torian Prince in years past was a guy who set the tone there. When he's out there in the second unit, I'm not seeing enough there from him. You know, I'll get the box score up. But, you know, Jared Allen, you know, Kevin Durant had 11 boards. We had Jared Allen had 11 boards, including 2 offensive boards. And DeAndre Jordan had 5. Wow. Surprise, surprise there from DeAndre Jordan. But only 15 minutes, which is something that I'm pretty happy to see. But Torian Prince had 5, so I guess I'm a little bit surprised by that. It's, I don't know. I just thought that the mentality and the timing on the boards and when the boards were happening and giving up offensive boards, you know, all those extra possessions, offensive boards gets that, missed shots gets that, turnovers gets that. And it just led to just poor play on that end of the floor. But Nick, Alex also got this quote from Steve Nash on the final shot. Nash wanted the Nets to push it full court, had 2 screens on it, and liked the shot Irving got as well as Durant. All right, he's talking shit. Like, you can't like the shot
he's just being a player's coach.
He's being incredibly pragmatic, but it's just at certain times you're going to be like, oh, nah, I would have preferred Kyrie Irving to drive it there. And if it pisses Kyrie Irving off, so what? You're the coach. And as much as I'm not like, you know, coach dictator, coach says all sort of thing, you got to show a little, and maybe he did like that shot. But I don't, and I don't think a lot of other Nets fans did, and I think that he's showing a level of just playing it safe, playing it like Sweden, that it's just like, come on, man. Like, you don't have to appease every single player on the roster all the freaking time. You know, give Bruce Brown, like, oh, yeah, he's going to be out there, he's going to be ready. Then give him some goddamn minutes. Like, it's... I'm getting a little bit over of the pleasantries. Like, it was fun in the preseason, and we mentioned it. It's just like, he's saying all the right things. He's so good with the media. But right now, like, this isn't what you're paid for right now. You're paid to coach. And if you say the right thing, if you say some dumb things, you get a bit angry and get attacked like Scott Brooks did or whatever, then that's what we want to sort of see. You know, I just don't think
definitely a tech-worthy game because of all the late calls. Like, that alone is enough to frustrate a coach. You know what I mean? And you hinted at it, Jack. Like, Westbrook would literally complain about not getting a call and they would call the foul. Like, what? He's not LeBron James. If it happens to LeBron, it's annoying as hell, but he's LeBron. This is Russell Westbrook. He's sporadic and out of control. And that one play where Jared Allen barely even touched him, he got the call. I was just like, come on. Like, what are we doing here? And the rest, I don't know if, like, they're missing preseason or what. It just seems like a lot of these calls that are kind of easy, you're seeing other refs have to come in and make the call from the other side of the court. Like, for example, that Kyrie Irving one where he got slapped on the arm. And the one ref, like, that's standing there.
Slapped on the arm. And Bradley Beal's complaining about the one on Kevin Durant where it's just like, the arm is not part of the basketball, you dickhead. Like, I don't understand, like, the way that... And the whole bench was erupting about it. And KD's just like, you got my arm, dude. Like, he's just like, what the hell is going on here? It's just, it was idiocy from the officials tonight. And it's not the reason why we lost the game, but there was just so many dumb calls where it's just like, this is Bird Box Take 2, the sequel with Sandra Bullock. I'm just like, what the hell is going on? Like, there are so many, it's like Russell Westbrook gets angry, so he deserves a call. Well, if Caris LeVert gets angry, he gets a tech. Now, we can talk about Caris LeVert a little bit later, but there was just so much inconsistency and incongruency and just stupidity from the officials. And look, the Brooklyn Nets were pretty damn stupid themselves tonight. But the officials, you would think, actually, Nick, to say it, it would be easier to ref and officiate without crowds, without the external circumstances of that, because you don't have the yelling and the influence from home teams or whatever. But it seems to me that there's even more inconsistencies. And I'm not saying it's against the Brooklyn Nets. And
it's across the league, to be honest.
And there were some dumb calls in there, and we might have to chat about it on the outlet a little bit. But there was just dumb calls aplenty, and stupidity seemed to reign supreme tonight.
Yeah, it really did. And like you said, that's not the reason the Nets lost. It didn't obviously help, but this was a game they could have easily won. Like, if they put together just, like, some decent quarters, they win this game. You know what I mean? It's just, like, they can't put things together for the entire stretch. You see, let's see, look, going through quarter to quarter, Washington wins the first quarter 29-28. Washington loses the second quarter 41-43. Third quarter goes in favor of Washington 24-22. And quarter four is 29-29. So the Nets couldn't outplay Washington for one quarter at the end of the game and essentially just lost by one. So it's just like, it's, they were so bad for the first three quarters. And all they had to do was kind of put together a good 12 minutes of basketball, and they had this game, and they couldn't do it.
No, they couldn't. And some of that is on Steve Nash not being able to make the right rotations. And he seemed to have found, like, all right, cool, I'm going to stagger the minutes now. But then there's times where it's just like, don't stagger the minutes. Or there's times where it's just like, all right, Jeff Green came in too late. Or why wasn't Jared Allen out there for the final couple of possessions for rebounding purposes? Yep. It's not like Jared Allen was poor. Yes, like, he gets bodied a little bit sometimes, and Thomas Bryant seems to outplay him quite consistently. And it's more just pick and pop sort of related. And Jeff Green was good there. He was really good there. But at the same time, in closing final possessions where rebounding is your issue. And Steve Nash said this to Brian Lewis. Steve Nash thinks that they'll turn it over, even they'll turn it around, even though tonight's number of 20 was high in relation to the turnovers. But he admits that rebounding is the problem. You can change that by putting on the team's best rebounder. Like, whether you sub out TLC, maybe. TLC, I mean, he was there for the clutch bucket and running out by the awesome outlet pass from Kevin Durant. I thought his passing was tremendous tonight. We can dive deep into the players once we get through the crux of this game. But, like, you're making it, like, it's the DJ Khaled GIF all over again. Congratulations, you played yourself. You're talking about a problem you could remedy, yet you're saying that that's the problem. How do you fix the problem? I don't know. Play maybe he's the second best rebounding percentage player in the NBA behind only Andre Drummond, and he's playing like 25 minutes a game. I mean, he should be playing in the 30 minutes. There's no doubt about that. He should be starting. DeAndre Jordan shouldn't even be getting freaking goddamn minutes. Play Reggie Perry above that goddamn Timberland scrub. But... sorry.
the Timberland scrub. No, but you're right, Jack, in the sense of like, yo, you know Steve Nash, you can play Kevin Durant at the three. That's not against the law. Like, you can play Jeff Green at the four, especially if you're getting murdered on the boards and Washington's going to play big. Like, Davis Bertans and Rui Hachimura are closer to fours than Torian Prince, TLC, you know what I mean? And all these guys the Nets try to play at the four, try to have defend fours. Like, it was just a really frustrating game because you could see the Nets were the more talented team, but they could not execute. And that's on the players and it's also on the coaches. And also, like you said, Jack, like, hey, we can switch up the rotation. Like, Bruce Brown can get in there. Rodions could even freaking get in there. Tyler Johnson can get in there. Chris Chiosa can get in there. I don't care. Just play somebody else because the second unit is, like, really bad right now. There's just, just nothing going on. And it's like, I don't even know if the staggering is working completely. It's just like, it just feels everything is all over the place and nothing is in sync yet. 2020 has reshaped how we work, and it's almost over. Businesses across the globe are challenged to be more efficient, which means every hire is critical. Indeed is here to help. Indeed is the number one job site in the world with more total visits than any other job site, according to ComScore. Indeed helps you find quality candidates quickly so you can focus on hiring the person you need to keep your business going. Unlike other sites, Indeed gives you full control and payment flexibility over your hiring. You only pay for what you need, you can pause your account at any time, and there's no long-term contracts. And now Indeed's new way of matching you with candidates instantly delivers a short list of quality candidates whose resumes on Indeed match your job criteria that you can contact the moment you sponsor a job, making Indeed the only site that moves as fast as you do. Right now, Indeed is offering our listeners a free $75 credit to boost your job post, which means more quality candidates will see it fast. Try Indeed out with a free $75 credit at Indeed.com/BlueWire. This is their best offer anywhere. Go right now to Indeed.com/BlueWire. Offer valid through December 31st. Terms and conditions apply. The NBA is back in action and football is heading into the playoffs. You might not be at a game this year, but you can still be in on the action at BetOnline. BetOnline is going the extra mile to make sure you can get on every possible chance to win the season. From game spreads and totals to team, player, and coaching props, BetOnline gives you more options to wager than anywhere else. You can get on the season opening bonuses today and start off wagering on wins, division, and championship futures all day, every day. Head to BetOnline today and take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. Don't forget to use promo code BLUEWIRE at BetOnline.ag. That's BLUEWIRE, all one word, BetOnline, your online sportsbooks expert.
Yeah, like, Caris LeVert is clearly struggling, and a lot of that is on him and his incredibly poor shot selection and lack of aggression in getting to the line. We can, again, dive deep into players, but, you know, I had literally here in the third, in my second quarter notes, second unit stinks, and it stinks. It has been really bad. You know, looking at the stats, if you look at the metrics when you go to NBA.com, it's not getting it done. And yep, staggering might certainly help that if KD or Kyrie out there. And I like Kyrie with Caris LeVert a little bit, but Kyrie's not necessarily a guy that's going to be a point guard. You know, you'd be better out there with Spencer and Caris, but we don't have Spencer right now. And a guy who can maybe do that a little bit, and a guy who I posted a video highlights package of who killed the Nets last year, is Bruce Brown. He said in the preseason, Nick, that he's going to surprise the people with some of his point guard skills, his playmaking skills. And look, Chris Chioza could do that as well. I mean, I'm so
even Tyler
much...
Johnson could do it. Like, Tyler Johnson showed it in the bubble. Like, it wasn't amazing, but he was a nice secondary ball handler next to Karras. I felt like they had nice chemistry. And, like, Chioza, pretty much the same thing. It's just, like, you clearly can see that second unit does not have enough creation. Like, it's... Karras LeVert's a good player, and even at his best, even if he was peak-level Karras, that's still a lot to ask of him. He's never going to be Kyrie Irving or Kevin Durant. Like, he's not going to carry the entire offensive load when literally no other player on the floor can create for themselves. Like, Landry Shamet, like, we have an idea. Maybe he has some point guard skills. They're not developed. Torian Prince, that ship has sailed. Jeff Green never really was his game. He'll occasionally give you a bucket, and obviously Jared Allen isn't creating for himself. So it's just like, what are we doing here? You're making it easy for the second unit defenses too, because all they essentially have to do is either stop Karis LeVert from driving or stop the Jared Allen Karis LeVert pick and roll.
There's a simplicity to it on both ends that just makes it easy for the opposition, like you mentioned there, Nick. And you know, there has to be some level of change if it continues to be a problem, because you know, the early points of the season was all working. You know, Karis was getting to the line a little bit, took 6 free throws against the Golden State Warriors. He's taken 2 since. 2! I remember I was just like, during the game tonight, I'm like, you know what, I'm going to check out B-Ball Ref and see how many free throws he's taken this season.
I felt he should have probably got 4 tonight. There was the one play where he got really heated and he clearly gets slapped on the wrist. And then the one against Robin Lopez, I felt like there was enough contact to give him a free throws on that play.
And that, and the reason why he didn't get the calls there, and then after that, he didn't get to the line at all. Maybe it was just like, well, they're not going to call anything, so I'm just going to take these mid-range. I'm going to take these... Yeah. Pull-up threes that it's
the
just
pull-up
like...
threes he's just got a the pull-up three is only something you can go to if your other shot is falling, or it's like once a game or something. But like, if you're in a funk, that's a tough shot. We just complained that Kyrie Irving took that shot. Like, why are you taking that shot, Karis LeVert? I'm not as upset about some of the mid-range and the floater stuff, because I feel like that's part of his game, especially in the second unit offense, and they're just shots he's not hitting. But the pull-up threes, it's just like, you don't need to do that, especially early in the shot clock. Or, you know, I think some of the decisions at the shot clock timing is what frustrates me the most.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. And I'll argue against the fact that I don't mind the mid-rangers. I don't. You know, I think that his greatest skill, like last season and such, was his aggression and the ability to get to the line and to put the pressure on the defenses. We've seen two wraparound passes, at least from memory, where he's penetrated so much that he's wrapped around the ball to DJ or Jared Allen this season. He's done that twice. Whereas like in seasons past, it was like his signature move. And there's this timid nature. And on some of the shots that you're talking about, the pull-ups, the floaters, the mid-ranges, it's all of them are short. I can't remember once where he's overshot it. So that to me shows that, you know, it's flatter. And I don't know what it is, Nick, but, you know, it's
usually
it's almost...
fatigue. If you're shooting everything short, it's typically fatigue. Because
He shouldn't be fatigued, though, to be honest. Like, it's not
he's playing... He did just carry the team in the bubble by himself. And... I'm not saying like he's obviously he could be fatigued or he could be conditioned, but it's not like every player in the NBA is in great shape right now given the shortened offseason.
Oh yeah, and
look, and we don't even know, he could have rehabbed an injury over the offseason and not trained as much. Like, I think that's like, it's not out of the realm of possibility for him to be fatigued and getting his minutes conditioned right now.
No, look, that's totally fine, and it could be a totally reasonable expectation, but he's also playing less minutes than he was last season as well. The burden on him in terms of minute load is better, so you would expect a higher intensity and a greater execution in a shortened span. But again, it's an adjustment. I said on the last podcast, and I put it out there as a little bit of a clip before the game today, that, you know, Karras's form, if Karras isn't going to be the third best player on this team right now, the Nets are struggling, because right now he's not. He's like the fifth. Joe Harris is playing better. Jared Allen's playing better. I'm not making an argument for anyone else. It's Karis LeVert's probably the fifth best player on this team right now. Am I wrong?
No, I think you're right. But it's also like, obviously his role is substantially different than Joe and Jared Allen's, where it's kind of more plug and play. You know what I mean? Yep. Like, Joe Harris is playing off of guys. And agree that Karis is struggling. The second unit doesn't have enough creation. And I think, like, to an extent, it's somewhat predictable. And also, the book is a little bit out on him. You know what I mean? Like, you don't like the mid-range shots, but you also can't drive every play. That's why Westbrook's not effective. Like, it just doesn't work. So you need to mix it up. And he needs to hit those floaters or those elbow jumpers just to kind of keep the defense honest. Because if they're pulling out that far, then he can get in the lane. It's really the difference.
Yeah, and look, tonight, his stat line, 6 points on 3 of 13 shooting, didn't get to the line, 5 boards, 5 assists, 3 blocks, you know. I think the three block.
I thought they felt more like steals, to be honest.
Yeah, and
I didn't think any of them were blocks.
And I thought that there was a little bit of inconsistency from him on that end of the floor, and there has been, you know, quite literally all season. And it's the Caris LeVert experience when it comes to defense, especially. But you know, that inconsistency, you know, is becoming pronounced, and we can't. He's so important to this team right now, especially with Spencer Dinwiddie out. And when he looked at his best in the brief moments, it's when he was out there with both KD and Kyrie and Joe Harris, because you know he's not asked to do every single little thing. And it's not to say that he can't. It's just that, you know, the level of support for him right now is there. Like, it's on the roster. Like, you know, Steve Nash can go, you know what, let's throw out.
The way Steve Nash handled the situation in the second quarter where he was really frustrated. I feel like it would have been very easy to kind of put him on the bench, but he kind of encouraged him and tried to get him out of the funk. I don't know how much of an effect it had, but I felt like he played a little bit better after that. His shot selection, I think, in the third quarter was still kind of rough, but that's when he got the steal. Well, they have registered as blocks, but steals. He was running and transition. So it's just like you said, I think kind of just getting him back to a smaller role, or maybe it's even just getting a point guard on the second unit.
Yeah, I don't know, Nick. I don't know. Is there any guys you want to jump into next?
Yeah, let's. We can go with Jared Allen. I feel like, you know, Jared Allen, it did have some success in this game, and obviously he's just such a great option for the Nets offense in terms of, like, I think their on-off numbers with him are probably ridiculous after this game just because of, like, the offense he provides and an offensive rating. He was minus -5 here, but, like, they just click so much more because he's such a better option as a vertical spacer. You saw Kyrie hit him a couple of times, and it just forces the defense in such a tough situation. And I feel like he's starting to get better synergy with those guys. I think some of the toughness he needs to get better. He needs to just kind of learn to use his quickness in those situations where the guys are more physical. Beat them to the spot, force the offensive foul, or reach in and kind of swipe at the ball. You have to do something to make them uncomfortable. Too many times he just kind of sits there in the post and allows himself to get bodied.
Yeah, and I thought that other than, you know, we know he lacks the frame to go up against the bruises. And when he loses position and when it's deep, you know, it's almost going to be a bucket. You know, if Thomas Bryant gets straight down there, but, you know, you still look at his stat lines and I still thought that he was, yeah, four blocks. And all of them are like blocks where it's just like, man. And then he like recovers and almost gets like a second block as well. You know, the recovery speed from a center like him, you don't normally see it. You know, he's incredibly quick and nimble.
It's elite.
It's really elite. You know, 14 points, 11 boards, including two offensive ones. Had four blocks. And what I'm loving, Nick, and I said this in previous pods, 8 of 9 from the free throw line.
Yeah.
Loving that.
I feel like at times in the past, he's kind of almost scared to get the ball. Now he's feeling more comfortable in the paint and understanding that if he just goes up, he's probably going to get free throws because they're going to be swiping at the ball. You know what I mean? So it's a nice little add to his game. He had a couple push shots tonight. Still a little bit off, but if he can develop those, that would be such a game changer for the offense because then he just becomes that much more important.
Yep. No, I totally agree. I think that, you know, it's
One pass where he tried to force the Landry Shamet on the cut when KD was open at the 3-point line. That one was just like, what are you doing?
Yeah, there was a lot of those passes tonight.
Yeah.
He had one of them. I think KD had one of them. I think Kyrie had a couple of them. There was just
Green had some.
Yeah, I mean, and look, there's just a lot of turnovers, Nick, and hopefully turnovers are easily correctable. Rebounding, not as much, and defense. I think that's, I'm not as necessarily as worried about the turnovers as much as probably they are the most frustrating thing because they are the most visible and they turn into points and they turn into extra possessions for the other team. But I think they're the most easily correctable. It's just like, don't be so dumb with the ball in your hands.
Especially against a team like the Wizards. It's not like we played the Toronto Raptors and they forced 10 steals or something. You know what I mean? A lot of these were just terrible passes. Like, it's almost like they're trying to get their teammates involved too much at times. Like, I remember there was one play where Jeff Green tried to squeeze the ball to Kevin Durant when he literally had no one in front of him and he could have just drove to the rim.
Yeah. Like, it seems like the Nets are doing too much on both ends of the floor. They're going over the top with the helping. Or then
they're literally doing either too much or they're doing nothing.
Yeah, there's no middle ground at this point. And we saw some pretty good lead. And look, the video's going around and I'm loving the video where KD, the initial one in the early part of the game where KD's like to Joe, he's like, don't help. I initially, and a lot of people probably got caught up in it as well, which is like, Joe, help. But it's like the possession that they were alluding to was KD had Rui Hachimura down low, and then Joe goes to double, leaving Denny Avdija open for the three. And then on the next position, KD gets to the line, or there's a turnover, whatever, and there's a stoppage. And KD's like to Joe, don't help. And I'm just like, I like this. It's just like coaching on the floor. You know, I think that his leadership has been immense this season. I don't think he's getting credit for that, but he deserves a lot for it. And then at the half as well, I'm not necessarily sure what was said, but as they were heading in, you know, he stops Joe Harris and he's just like, all right, you're doing this, you're doing this, you're doing this. The thing is, though, Nick, Joe is soaking this up. It's not like he's like
he's not showing upset. Yeah, no, I don't think any Nets player is going to be upset with Kevin Durant giving them tips.
I think he wants it. He's soaking this up. And, like, you know, the three-point foul that he gave to Russell Westbrook was stupid, you know, and just dumb. Like,
I kind of felt like Davis Bertans kind of gave him a little bump there, but that's just me.
And, look, you know, Joe was incredibly frustrated. And we saw some reporters tweet out the fact that it was, like, audible that they could hear Joe, like, smash the table. And I'm like, this is the mentality I think Joe is having this season. You know, there was a real key clutch three that gave the Nets the lead, you know, in the midpoint of the fourth quarter, and Joe's like, and they called the timeout, and Joe's like, I got you. And I'm just like, there's a mentality shift from Joe Harris now where he knows he's one of the best three-point shooters in the league. He knows his importance and value to this team on both ends of the floor, and he knows he needs to be better in certain defensive sets. He needs to have better awareness, better intelligence. And obviously, he's going to get caught out a couple of times here and there, but he's not going to get caught out here and there for a lack of trying, because he's showing a lot more effort than some other guys can probably on this roster can be called out for.
He's just physically limited, and teams are just attacking him because they're playing so small. You know what I mean? It's like, oh, like, yeah, Kyrie Irving just got switched on this big guy. Joe's going to come in and try to help him. But, like, Joe Harris is only, like, 6'5", 6'6". He's got a good frame. It's not like he has a crazy avert or anything. He's not going to be able to bang with these guys down low. So it's almost like putting in somewhat of a disadvantage. I mean, to be honest, like, to get Joe some more shots, I wouldn't mind seeing him play a little bit with the second unit at times, especially because of some of the synergy we've seen between Caris LeVert, Joe Harris, and Jared Allen. Like, in the bubble, they had some great plays together. We saw a lot of stuff Jock Vaughn drew up for all three of those guys. Maybe that could just be enough to help Caris LeVert a little bit, somebody that he can count on and somebody the defense has to react to.
Yeah, look, and Nick, we've got some quotes from Matt. Kyrie and Katie are currently chatting. And he's talking about, Kyrie's talking a little bit about just the frustration and the overhelping and such. So and Matt sort of said to himself, he's like, you know, he's trying to put up the full quotes, but he's doing it in the moment and stuff. So Kyrie Irving said it's just early rust. Sometimes the team's in the wrong spots and overhelping. They're not getting frustrated over just six games. And so it seems to me that the level-headed nature of Kyrie Irving at this point in time, you know, it's better. It's much better that they have the mentality that they do than the mentality that me and you do, because I can't imagine. I think it's much more frustrating as a fan because we know what needs to be changed and we think it's just an easy sort of flip the switch sort of thing. But it is a process, and I understand that. And it's maybe taken me 25 minutes into this podcast and to hear it from one of our two superstars and see it on Twitter from the great Matt Brooks. But look, and even Kevin Durant himself sort of saying about the turnovers, I had six turnovers. I'm turning over the ball too much. Look, but I think that there's eventually going to be that balance. You know, some of the best teams that win championship have rust early on in establishing their identity, their principles, and executing on them. We know, and the good thing is we sort of know what those principles are. And sometimes it's just like it takes ages to establish any form of identity. We know what the identity is. It's ball movement. It's moving. It's sharing. It's getting good looks. It's getting out in transition. It's getting out on the fast break. And then defensively, it's switching. It's executing. It's being able to make the defense sort of rotate and make it harder for them. But at the same time, you know, it's six games in and it's not going to be all days at this point in time. And look, there are a lot of teams that are showing inconsistencies, even the best teams in the league. So hearing it from Kyrie Irving makes me feel a little more comfortable, I guess.
Yeah, and I think we said pretty much some of the same stuff. You know, seven games into the season, there's going to be rust, there's going to be issues. It's a new team, a new coaching staff. Then also another thing to take into account is the lack of practice. Because the season is shortened, you know, I think Steve Nash alluded to that they only had a film session in between the last game. So it's like they didn't even get back on the court to kind of correct some of these things. And some of the stuff is just going to take reps. You know what I mean? It's going to be learning the behaviors of your teammates and what they can do and what they can't do. And it's funny, it's like they talk so much about overhelping, but there's so many times where they underhelp. We're like when Kyrie Irving has Thomas Bryant in the post, like, what the hell is Kyrie Irving doing against Thomas Bryant? Like, he literally has 6 inches and 100 pounds on him.
And why is Kyrie in the post in the first place? Like, how is that rotation forced him down low? Like, at the very least, it can be Karras or Jeff or Taurean or whoever else, or, you know, Jared Allen or KD. But, you know, it shouldn't be a guard down there. It shouldn't be Karras. It shouldn't be Kyrie. It shouldn't be Landry. It shouldn't be those guys. Kevin Durant.
What you see from really good defenses, Jack, is usually, oh, shit, Kyrie got switched in the post. That other defender instantly realizes they're going to switch right away, and they're going to do it so fast that the other team can't react. You know what I mean? That's what you would see from Golden State. Golden State was so good at that and reacting and rotating. Obviously, one of the best defenses we've probably seen in the last 10 years. But the Nets need to get better with the rotations. They're just not clean. And when they do help, it's just too many times where they're just, like, stuck there and they don't relocate.
Yeah, Houston really good at that as well.
Yeah.
You know, even last season for certain points and before that with Chris Paul as well.
And Toronto too, obviously.
Yep. There's a lot of teams. And look, at this point in time, the Nets are a bad defensive team.
To be honest, that's not a realistic expectation for myself for this team at this point in time.
Look, I think that if we didn't see any glimpses like we did in the Boston Celtics game, I would be a lot more worried. And I think that a lot of more general pundits who haven't watched every single game and recapped every single game are like, man, this team plays no defense. They have nothing in line. Where it's just like, we kind of see it because we know what the principles are. We know what they're trying to do. And we know how they can execute when it is locked on. And against the Boston Celtics, who are one of the better teams in the NBA, you know, it looked pretty damn good. Nick, via Alex Schiffer, Kevin Durant said in reference to his don't help me comment to Joe Harris in the first half that he saw someone coming over when he had his man bottled up. Said if he has someone inside the three-point line and they pick up their dribble, leave him be. He's got him. Kevin Durant just knows basketball, man. He's just so damn smart.
Yeah, and I actually think I know exactly what play he was talking about. He had Rui kind of like on the baseline almost, and he picked up the dribble, and it's just like, KD doesn't really need help. And if Rui's going to hit tough shots, he hit a couple tonight, you're going to live with it. A double team's not going to change a turnaround fadeaway shot over a seven-footer.
Yep. Oh, and look, in relation to this, to the six turnovers, he said, I've got to turn it down if our team is going to be successful. This is the sort of thing that you like to hear from your team leaders. You know, if it was Paul George, it's like, oh, well, it was Doc Rivers not calling the right sets for me. Whereas Kevin Durant is taking the onus upon himself and going, I need to be better. And look, he does. Like, you know, for as much good as he did tonight, and look, the six turnovers were because he was trying to get his teammates open and such, but yeah, it wasn't the best.
And a few of them were just kind of like guys were, I think, were supposed to be in spots and they weren't there. Or they relocated where KD's kind of expecting you, let me kind of do my work and I'll throw it out, you know, the three-point shot to you.
Yeah. Nick, in relation to the timeouts, we can have a little bit of chat about that. You know, we saw Kyrie Irving call out one. And Kevin Durant said this in relation to Steve Nash. Steve knows when to call timeouts. He knows what he's doing over there. We all trust him. That's via Matt Brooks. Do you trust him, Nick?
I think he still is developing. I'll say that. I won't be able to give him a full grade on anything until we see it throughout the year. And we see this team actually running the systems they're supposed to be running, because right now they're not executing, and that's pretty clear from even not knowing the exact scheme they're supposed to run. Just based off the communication and stuff, it's just not smooth, and they're just not in sync, and they're not in rhythm. And I think also just like one thing he needs to change is he's just kind of playing too small, I think, a lot. And the other teams are just seeing it, and they're just like, okay, well, we're just going to continue to body them. And it might be as easy as just finding a better small forward or finding a real power forward so KD can play the three, because I thought KD looked really good defensively against Bradley Beal tonight.
Yeah, I think that he's the best player in the NBA, Nick. And I think that if people are watching, and there's like ways
you
where
tell
like
Kyrie Irving that.
I mean, yeah, he's being limited by Kyrie in certain respects. Kyrie's getting a little bit of hero ball about him, and I'm sure KD is fine with it. But you know, maybe KD needs to have a word with him.
Someone needs to tell Kyrie that not fine with it.
Yeah, he needs to tell him like he was telling him about the goddamn post-ups and maybe have a word to him about that. But look, in saying that, I'm comfortable because there's a part of me that's sort of thinking, just before I went on the pod and just went to the bathroom, and I was like, look.
Always good thoughts in the bathroom. It's a known
thing. You always get the zen. There's just, I don't know, something about the fluorescent lights. But I was sort of thinking, I'm like, okay, right now, Kevin Durant is at his best. And what did I say? He's improving to his best. He's in the 90s, whatever. What did I say on the preseason pods with you and Matt and Nolan and everyone else? I'm like, if Kevin Durant is one of the best players in the NBA, the Brooklyn Nets have the best chance of winning a championship. That's where the impetus lies. I need to stick to that. Now, the little things around the wings about defensive principles, about turnovers, about rebounding, those are at least somewhat correctable. And if they aren't going to be correctable, then it could prevent the Nets from winning a championship. But
and Sean Marks lost times to make a trade.
And look, I think that that needs to happen, whether it's George Hill, whether it's Aaron Gordon, or whoever else on the roster. You know, throw 85 second round picks to the Oklahoma City Thunder and maybe like a lightly protected first for George Hill. Get that dude in like ASAP. Yeah. I'm sure that that's something that could quite easily change things. But yeah, in terms of the timeouts, Nick, you know, what did you think about Kyrie calling the timeout? Are you going to be, give me some Shannon Sharp, Skip Bayless, Stephen A. Smith, Kendrick Perkins thing? Is it Kyrie?
No, I like it. I think it was great. I think it's what you need to do. If obviously, I thought this way in the last podcast, like, yo, if you don't know what you're doing, and you literally don't know what you're supposed to be doing, you can't fix it yourself. Like, if you literally don't know, it's like, okay, Jack, I need you to answer this question about U.S. history. You don't know the answer. You're not magically going to know the answer. You know what I mean? Like
Kentucky. Sorry, I don't know.
No, but you know what I mean? Like, if you don't know, you don't know. It's not like you can pass it along mentally. Like,
yeah, no, it's a really good point, Nick. I wanted to dive deep into some of the players. Kevin Durant's performance tonight. 15 shots, yet 28 points, 10 of 12 from the free throw line. Love when he gets there, you know, and he shows that aggression. Kyrie was also 8 of 8 from there. I thought that their mentality in getting better shots and forcing the issue, they took that advice on board and probably watched the film, as Steve Nash was alluding to. I thought that he was, other than the 6 turnovers tonight, I thought it was... This is Kevin Durant, Nick, because he is a supreme passer, and that was something that developed in Golden State. He is so damn long, and he can defend, and he can get a board whenever a board is required. And he's insane as a shot maker. I mean, 2 of 7 from the 3-point line wasn't necessarily the best, but you know, I remember we saw a stat from our friend Seth Partner, who's appeared on the outlet before, sort of saying that Kevin Durant hasn't had an uncontested 3-point shot on the season. And before heading in tonight, he was shooting 50% from 3 on the season. That's probably going to go down a little bit now, but man, Kevin Durant is getting damn close to the Kevin Durant that we know and love. He's really, really close.
Yeah, he's really, really good. Some of the shots. Okay, so there's a shot I've been waiting for him to make, and I don't think he made it all season until tonight. Going the left.
Running layup one?
Yeah, the running layup. He missed it about 5 times this year, and that's a shot we know that he makes. He got that shot down, and I'm just like, you can't defend that. There's nothing you can do. It's impossible because it's like, I don't know, when you're growing up and you play one-on-one and that one kid has a shot that you just can't defend, like that's Kevin Durant against the NBA players. Like that's what he does. And Jack, do you think that maybe he's not fully taking over because he's kind of still getting his conditioning right? And maybe that's why he's kind of letting Kyrie do a little bit more? Or do you think it's more of a Kyrie thing?
I think it's a little bit of column A and column B. And I also don't think it's a Kyrie thing. I think it's him wanting to, you know, assert himself as a teammate and as a leader and as a passer. You know, to have 7 assists and after the performance the other night where he had, what was it, 8 assists, you know, a near triple-double against the Atlanta Hawks as well. You know, he's showing a complete nature to his game. And I think that, it's almost a bevy of riches to have Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant, you know, who's going to take the last shot? You know, a lot of teams would be like, man, I don't know who I want
to take. They both got it tonight and missed.
Yeah, I mean, look, I don't think that's going to happen more than once. I don't think that's going to happen more than once this season. I think that, you know, there's a learning experience that will come from this, and I'm hoping KD is like to Kai, man, don't take that shot next time, man. Just drive on him. Because they were getting to the line. Like I said, you know, they had 20 free throws between them.
And the refs were getting a little whistle happy at the end of the fourth, too. You know what I mean? They were calling fouls that were probably a little touchy.
Yeah, it seems to me that, you know, and I think even if Kyrie Irving didn't at least push the issue, because one of his greatest skills, and maybe his greatest skill and one of his most elite skills out of every other player in the history of the NBA is his handle. And he can split defenses and he can carve defenders into spots where it's just like, I can get off the glass here. I can hit a bank shot. I can hit a 10-foot fadeaway or whatever. Whereas if he settles, he's bailing out the defense, like you mentioned, Nick. But yeah, Kevin Durant, master performance. And look, Kyrie Irving was pretty damn good himself, you know.
I would just say this about KD before we go to Kyrie. I like the way that KD ran the offense better.
Yep.
I like the way that he facilitates a little bit more. Say that again, Jack.
In reference in comparison to like Kyrie?
Yeah, in reference to Kyrie, I think KD is more like natural in like setting up the offense at times, where Kyrie gets a little bit more like you said, you know, he just gets his head down, he's looking at the basket, and that's what he's going to do. And sometimes that leads to, like, a little assist to Jared Allen down low or something like that. But I just feel like Kevin Durant just had a better feel and flow and things were kind of going to spots they were going to go to. You know what I mean? Like, KD's more likely to go into the post, get the double team, and throw the pass out to Joe Harris across on the other side of the court.
Yeah, that pass to TLC and some of the passes that he has to Taurean Prince, the sort of whip-out passes when he got someone in the post, either Taurean Prince or Joe Harris. That's happened a lot this season. And there aren't many, like, that sort of pass that KD threw to TLC at the end of the game. That's something you'd see, like, from LeBron James and Nikola Jokic. Yep. Like, absolutely pinpoint and precise. Awesome from him. And hopefully it continues to grow. And hopefully that scoring, you know, we see him taking the 20 shots. And, you know, I'm fine if Kyrie's taking 20 shots. But if Kevin Durant's only taking 15, then the offense isn't doing enough. Because, what, Caris LeVert had two less shots than him. And obviously their minutes are split up in a certain formal way. So, but yeah, Kevin Durant. He's getting damn close, and I know who he is, and I'm sure everyone else, if they're watching Brooklyn Nets basketball, definitely knows who he is as well. Check out the GIF if you don't know. But Kyrie Irving, Nick, what did you think of his performance tonight? 30 points, did have 10 assists, 5 boards, 2 blocks, 2 steals, 5 turnovers, 2 of 7 from the 3-point line, 8 of 8 from the free throw line. I did like his defense when he wasn't, you know, getting cooked in the post.
Yeah, no, his defense at times was aggressive with his hands, and I think a lot of the other Nets could learn something about that and just making the offensive player a little bit more uncomfortable. And he did that to Bradley Beal a couple times, and he had to pick up his dribble and pass it out, and that's a win. You know what I mean? And, like, I know I've probably felt like a little critical of Kyrie throughout this podcast, but I thought he had a great game. You know what I mean? I just would love to see Kevin Durant get the ball a little bit more at times, especially when some of the, like, pull-up threes or whatever it might be, when you have KD has freaking, like, Davis Bertans or literally anybody on the Washington Wizards roster. I feel good about KD having a one-on-one against them.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you feel comfortable with nearly anyone in the league having a one-on-one against Kevin Durant. If he has a one-on-one and he's not getting doubled, you know that he's going to make something happen.
I'll say this, it's been interesting. I like can't recall many shots at the rim. A lot of them were just mid-range, like pull-up shots.
I remember a couple, some of his layups and some of the calls that he's not getting, you know, when he splits the defense. And, you know, he is a master at reading the pick and knowing which direction to go and how to make the defense look silly. You know, the John Collins ankle breaker, you know, it'd be remiss of us to mention the fact that DeAndre Jordan cost us the highlight of the season, Nick.
Yeah, and even if freaking DeAndre, like, doesn't hold him, like, Thomas Bryant comes over a little sooner, he's still probably late, so the poster's even better.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Oh, my God. That like, I know I feel crazy saying this, but I feel like it could have changed the game. Like, look, it's just that big of a momentum play.
Yeah, and look, Kevin Durant, there was a lot of heart-in-your-mouth moments, gut-in-your-mouth moments because, you know, he fell and, you know, he's taken he's trying to posterize everyone, but... Man,
I thought he was more aggressive driving tonight than he's been in the past. I don't know if that's just the Wizards being trash or, like, he just felt more aggressive.
I thought that it was something that was probably looked at in the film. I think that, you know, we heard Steve Nash say that they didn't have a practice, but they were watching a lot of film. And I think that, you know, the offense was really sluggish against the Atlanta Hawks and they were settling for a lot of shots. But, man... If you want someone to test an Achilles, then the way that Kevin Durant did it tonight, I feel like if he wakes up with a slightly sore calf or whatever tomorrow, I wouldn't be surprised. And maybe he gets rested in the next game. Yep. I'm not 100% sure, but he put everything out there tonight and he showed the mentality to pull the Nets over the line. And, you know, if there were some other guys who were supporting him a little bit better, then maybe we would have got it done.
Yeah, he played good enough to win. Kyrie Irving played good enough to win. Those guys aren't the reason the Nets lost. You know, we can talk about Landry Shamet. You know, we already talked Jared Allen, Caris LeVert. Obviously, Caris LeVert didn't have a good game. If he makes two more of his shots that he typically could make, they could win. But Shamet's kind of feeling like a non-factor out there at times, Jack. Only one shot tonight, 2 assists. Just didn't really feel him offensively and defensively. Washington attacked him.
Yeah, and if you can't provide an intangible factor to your game and you tangibly need the ball in your hands, whether it's to shoot, whether it's to drive or whatever, you know, not to say that Rodion's course is the answer, but Rodion's always provides a spark with his energy. Not always, but that's been almost
yeah,
like...
Yeah, it can be good or bad with Rodion.
Yeah, exactly. There can be too much energy or in that sort of respect. Bruce Brown is a guy that we know can just provide intangible energy and hustle. Those sort of guys should be the 8th and 9th man in the rotation. It shouldn't be the guys that need the ball in the hands, need to get 3-point shots up, especially in a lineup with Caris LeVert when he's trying to get his offensive flow going. And he's also trying to, you know, make sure that Torian Prince is getting his shots and Landry Shamet's getting his shots. So, look, I think Bruce Brown should be getting minutes over Landry Shamet at this point in time because he's not executing well enough. And, look, he was the worst player if you're looking at plus-minus. Minus 15 in 17 minutes. You know, it's not good enough. And I think Landry Shamet has had some decent enough performances, but it's not to say that he has earned himself a rotation spot at this point of the season. Yes, the Nets gave up stuff for him and they gave up a first round or whatever, but sometimes you just got to play basketball and you just got to, you know, give minutes when they're due and, you know, go with what you think will actually get you the win, not necessarily, you know, back the guy in. If he's not executing, he's not executing.
Yeah, I mean, like, and also if you play someone in the first half and they don't play well, you can play someone else in the second half. It's not against the rules.
Yeah.
It's just... Someone should let Steve Nash know that, because I feel like sometimes that's just as simple as it could be for the Nets. You know what I mean? Just switch it out, try somebody new. We saw TLC catch fire from three tonight. That was a nice sight, 4 or 5. But, like, this is the issue with TLC, and this isn't against him. It's just, like, the Nets have him in their starting lineup to be a defensive stopper, but he's not a defensive stopper. He's a solid defensive player, but he's not going to shut down Bradley Beal or Russell Westbrook.
No, and I thought that his game tonight was really good. And I'm not expecting him to be Marcus Smart or whatever. Yeah. I'm expecting him to show some capable enough defense and hit the three-point shot. And if he's doing one of those two things...
And running the floor, which he did really well.
Yeah, I thought that if this is put TLC as a starter, that's what we need from him. You know, he's not going to hit 4 or 5 going forward. And, you know, he's not going to do all those things. But, you know, there was even a play where, like, he drove and he, like, did the dump-off pass or the kick-out pass to Joe Harris. I can't remember which one it was. Yep. But there was just, that was a really pretty team play. And I thought that he had a really good game tonight. And I think that his offense is going to be better than his defense because he can just look wet from three a lot of the time. You know, he can be Klay Thompson from there. But at the same time, you know, it's a hit and miss. It's a make or miss league, as they say. So look, TLC, great game from him tonight. I thought the starters were really good, obviously outside of DeAndre Jordan and, you know, Joe Harris. You know, this is the Joe Harris game that I want and need and always want and need from him. You know, 16 points, 6-11 from the field, 4-8 from three. That's what I want him taking. I want him taking 7 or 8 threes. He should be leading the team in that department. I had a couple of steals, had a couple of boards as well. KD is. You know, the confidence is continuing to grow. You know, he's like, you know what, I'm damn important to this team. My shots, my defense, you know, I need to help this team win. And, man, another really solid game from Joey Buckets.
Yeah, offensively, you know, Joe was as good as you can be. You know, the 4 of 8 and then just, you know, playing his role in the offense. I think defensively, like we kind of mentioned earlier, it's going to be tough for him. Like, it's going to be tough because they just don't. They don't really have good defensive players in their starting lineup other than Kevin Durant. Like, DeAndre Jordan is not a good defender. Kyrie Irving can play defense sometimes. TLC is, you know, solid. And Joe Harris is as good as he can be for his limitations. So it's just like, that's just going to be a consistent problem the starting lineup runs into unless they develop some amazing cohesion defensively.
Yeah, and that's why I think Bruce Brown should be there, because Jared Allen, it's weird because, like, the two best defense, at least known defensive commodities on our roster are coming off the bench or not playing. Jared Allen is by far the best defensive player on the team right now. He is an elite defensive player. And
the Nets defense would be literally disgusting if they did not have Jared Allen. It would just be like high school level defense.
It'd be so bad. I saw a tweet from you. I saw a tweet from Matt. I saw a lot of tweets, which is like, man, imagine this team without Jared Allen. They would be Atlanta Hawks times 100. They would be Atlanta Hawks and whatever other team is 30th and 29th in defensive rating. Because, man, he's a marvel. And we've talked about him a little
How
bit.
How much do you think would change, Jack, if they did start Jared Allen and Bruce Brown? And let's hypothetically say TLC is the one that gets removed.
I think that there's a better balance, Nick. I think that the offense might lose a little bit and you might not get like a 40-point in the first quarter, but you're not going to give up 35, you know, with Jared Allen out there. You know, and the minutes distribution tonight with Jared Allen and DeAndre Jordan is exactly what you want to see. Jared Allen gets 25, DeAndre Jordan gets 15. But, like, you know, and Jeff Green gets 16. You know, I've mentioned before, and I put out a tweet that did a little bit of traction, you know, when Jeff Green is out there on the floor, the Nets have, like, a 90 defensive rating. You know, and like we mentioned, you know, you play Jeff Green, you play Kevin Durant, you play Jared Allen. That's your three best defenders that are in the rotation right now. You put Bruce Brown out there. You know, I think that in the preseason, we were so tantalized by the offensive lineups. You know, put Landry Shamet and Joe Harris out there with Kyrie Irving, Kevin Durant, and Jeff Green. Man, that's going to be salacious. But at the same sort of time, the Nets are struggling on both ends of the floor in certain respects. And I think that they need to change a few things. And whether that's, Jared Allen. It's not that Jared Allen isn't limited to like 25 minutes. It seems that this might be the most minutes that he's played this season. And while I understand Jeff Green getting the majority of the minutes at the end of the game, I thought that Steve Nash again showed a rigidity where it's just like, okay, you know you can do defense offense. You can play Jared Allen here, and you can play Jeff Green on the other end. You can do that. You can switch. And I just thought that was hopefully these are learning moments and going forward, you know, Steve Nash, because we saw in previous games, you know, my tirade about DeAndre Jordan. And then the next game, Jared Allen plays the large majority of minutes and is out there in the closing moments, get a clutch rebound. Gets a clutch rebound against the Atlanta Hawks, Nick. What did the Nets need tonight? A clutch rebound. And we didn't have
it.
Jared Allen wasn't there. He just wasn't there.
Yeah, and I think even starting Jared Allen, like, I know everybody's talked about it, and we've said it too, is, like, more important he gets the minutes. But it's also, like, kind of setting the tone defensively to start the game. And he's also, like we talked about, the offensive rating is better with him on the floor than DeAndre Jordan. So it's not even like you're losing anything offensively. If anything, you're just a better freaking team with Jared Allen on the floor. And you just are going to start the game better. And I think in some aspects it matters. Like, rhythm in basketball is a thing. You know what I mean? And if you have momentum and it kind of carries over. And I think DeAndre is going to look a lot better against backup centers than he is against starters. You know what I mean? That's just more likely to happen. I don't think he's going to be great. Or maybe it's more Jeff Green backup center. I don't care. I think, like, Jared Allen just needs to have more of an impact. And I think, like, it's early on, but Steve Nash is kind of getting a little cute with things.
Yeah. I mean, he's a cute man. He looks good. He's got the nice mask. His hair's looking nice. But, man, yeah, we need to see, you know, some real, you know, purpose, some real sort of, you know, not necessarily reacting to things, but being proactive. It seems that, you know, and I think that a lot of guys, sometimes, like we sort of said, there's too much proactivity. It's just like doing too much. But the balance will come, and hopefully it comes against the Utah Jazz, Nick. And I guess what we have the luxury of sort of looking forward a little bit. We've discussed all the quotes, and we've heard from KD, Kyrie. We've discussed what we think needs to change. You know, would you start Jared Allen against Rudy Gobert, though, Nick? You know, we know that DeAndre Jordan is that sort of bruiser type. Is this the time to do it? And then the game after, we've got Joel Embiid in the 76ers.
Yeah, I would definitely probably do DeAndre against Embiid. Rudy's like he's obviously physical, but he's also, like, not super quick, but he uses his strides pretty well to move from spot to spot. So, like, I could see him cooking DeAndre's ass too on those oops. Like, that's going to be a problem for the Nets, because that's one area they've been absolutely terrible. I don't know if it's the scheme or whatever it is, or people not rotating. Whenever the big helps, there's automatically an open rim. You know what I mean? No one rotates under the rim to help. Like, KD has done it occasionally, but if he has to defend somebody else out and that's not his spot to rotate, what are we doing here? Like, and also I think, like, DeAndre Jordan doesn't know what's up. There's one play, Gotham's Reckoning tweeted it out. I forget who is guarding. You know what I'm talking about.
Let me find it. You talk through it and I'll find it.
Rui, I think, is in the post, and DeAndre is trying to help, and he's standing behind the guy defending in the post. He's just standing there, and Thomas Bryant is under the rim, and he's, like, has Kyrie trying to come over from weak side to get in front of Thomas Bryant. But DeAndre is doing absolutely nothing but just standing in the freaking paint.
Yeah, he's literally in no man's land. And, like, we can forgive someone sort of doing too much or overhelping and that sort of thing. But DeAndre Jordan is neither underhelping or overhelping. He's no help.
Helping the other team.
Yeah, like, it literally is. It's something that needs to change. And I don't know what he's doing. He's not playing like an NBA basketballer. Like, it's really, really poor from him. And, okay, yeah, so I've got the video here. So it's Rui on TLC in the post. He's posting him up. And DeAndre Jordan is in the middle of the lane while Kyrie Irving is trying to guard Thomas Bryant and also Denny Abdia out on the perimeter. It's just like, why are you
doing that? Rui doesn't even have a foot in the paint, right, Jack? Rui's not even in the paint yet.
No, he's outside the paint, you know, and it's not like he's not like he's got deep position down low where you can double and then also get the rebound in effect. He's just like, He's an ineffective basketballer right now, Nick. So, yeah, that's one thing that could easily change. Give DeAndre Jordan 12 to 10 minutes or single-digit minutes. Jared Allen starts or doesn't start or whatever, and Jeff Green gets a little bit of a bump into the sort of 20s. I think that whenever he's out there, he makes a positive impact. I really like his game. And, you know, his body on Rolo, just like, you know,
man.
Right?
Damn, that was tough, bro. Both ends of the floor.
He's thick, man. You know, Jeff Green's pretty thick, and he's strong. And
he's stronger than Jared Allen.
Yeah, I want to see Jeff Green minutes, you know, to bump up a little bit, especially if we maybe don't see Kevin Durant in one of these two games against Philly or Utah. He's playing better than Torian Prince. We haven't chatted about Torian Prince because man, Torian Prince is getting into some of the old tendencies where it's just like, all right, why are you
turnovers, bro?
Yeah, like, how do you, like, why are you the one getting turnovers? Like, Kevin Durant, I can understand because he deserves to have the ball in his hands. And Caris LeVert, I can understand a little bit too, but there should be no reason why you have three turnovers.
Yeah, like, either you should have an open lane to drive and go for a dunk or drop it off to Jared Allen, or you should just pass the ball before you drive because it's just not your game. Like, and I think we kind of talked about helping the second unit, maybe some Jeff Green center minutes too for the second unit, and that's why starting Jared Allen would make more sense because then you open up the paint a little bit for Caris LeVert to get to the rim a little bit more because then you're playing five out. You know what I mean? But obviously, if teams aren't respecting Torian Prince, he's starting to hit his three-point shots, which is huge, but like, just stick to that. And that's why I think it's so important to get another creator on that second unit because then they can also create for Torian Prince, and he can just do what he does pretty well, shoot threes. You know what I mean? Last year wasn't great, but for his career, he's a pretty good three-point shooter.
Yeah, yeah, he needs to simplify his game, and, you know, we've asked for that.
Rebound, shoot threes, and try defensively.
George Hill, please save us. But we had talking Nets, and another a quote from Kyrie, and he's looking comfortable. I'm liking the hat that he's wearing in the postgame. The object of the regular season is to get better and prepare for the 16 wins in the playoffs. Kyrie on the early season struggles. You know, I've had that mentality a little bit as well, because, look, we discuss players that we know are going to be able to contribute in the playoffs. You know, Katie and Kyrie, obviously. Jared Allen, you know, I'm still iffy on. Hopefully, Caris LeVert does find his footing. Joe Harris definitely is going to be there. TLC can pinch hit. But now we need to continue finding those guys that can be 5 to 8 in the rotation. We need to, you know, get a George Hill. We need to test out a Tyler Johnson or a Rodion Skuritz or a Bruce Brown. This is the time where we need to figure that stuff out. And experimentation is okay, but you know, not experimenting and not showing proactivity and not changing things isn't enough, especially if the losses keep happening and the defense keeps being lackluster.
Yeah, I think the defense, like, not having any improvement from the last game to this game is the most frustrating thing. And some of the rebounding stuff, obviously, is extremely frustrating. It's like you said, you know, try out some different stuff, too. And obviously, you're not going to necessarily test new defenses until you are able to complete the defense that you're doing. But it's definitely just been a tough situation all around and so many moving parts. And like we said, we got such a good taste of the Nets to start the season the first two games that the fact that they're playing at this level is frustrating because we've already seen some high peaks from them.
Yeah, yeah, I think that because we know how good this team can be. And that's why we've had frustration levels for so many of other these players, like Jared Allen in the past, where he's not showing the physicality and the determination on the boards and such. It does get better. You know, it's, you know, Kyrie Irving's full quote is out there. You know, Chris Mulholland of Nets Daily has put it out there. Michael Scotto as well. I think that after talking through this and excuse some of my energy and maybe criticisms in the earlier part of the podcast, but, you know, sometimes it takes me 45, 50 minutes to talk through it with my guy to have a bit more of a level head and realize that it's game 6, game 7. And I understand that the timeline, Nets Twitter is burning to the ground right now. And I certainly didn't help. And probably when I put out some of the quotes that I've put from this podcast, it's not going to help either. But I think that the Nets are in decent enough footing. You know, they've shown enough for me to feel like that they're still there or thereabouts to be, you know, a genuine contender going forward. But there's still plenty of work and room to maneuver.
And obviously, like, I feel like we're not appreciating Spencer Dinwiddie enough, too. Is like the fact that they just lost one of their best players. Like, he's a top five player on the team. If you want to have him third, you want to have him fourth, you want to have him fifth, he's a top five player in the Nets, and he's going to probably be out for the season. I mean, we already saw Spencer rehabbing, which is, like, amazing. Like, yeah. It's literally ridiculous, and it's, like, so awesome, and it speaks to his work ethic and what he's trying to do. And I truly think that Spencer is doing everything in his goddamn power to be healthy by the end of the season, that if the Nets are in the finals, so he can get in there. Not to say that I'm sure the Nets would let him in or he can do that, but I'm sure that's his goal just based off of all the actions we've seen from him. And that's going to hurt. Like, he's a really good player. And, like, we've shit on his defense before, but even his defense and the athleticism he provides this team is going to be missed. And even some of just like the ability to rebound at his size, not to say that he did it consistently, but he could help in that area because he just has a little bit more length than some of the other guys we play, like a Landry Shamet, even a Joe Harris. Like, Spencer's just a better athlete than those guys.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I'm really, really happy for him. And I just hope that he's healthy going forward and he's happy. And yeah, that knee gets better. You know, he's a literal Iron Man knee. You know, he's literally Iron Man, and he's showing
might be
that.
A bionic knee.
Ah, yeah. There's a part of me that just thinks that, you know, we saw people doubt, you know, Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving. Kevin Durant especially, it's just like, oh, he's coming off an Achilles. He can be maybe the 10th best player. And he's just like, you know what? You know who I am. And maybe Spencer Dinwiddie can sneak us and surprise us all. I really, really hope that he can. I wanted to, before we do end up with this one, Nick, Christian Winfield has a cool tweet, and he's put this out there. Scene: Tyler Johnson and Reggie Perry on opposite ends of the floor well after the game getting shots up. Jeff Green comically casually strolls by in what looked like a velour sweatsuit, smoothie in one hand, plate of food in the other. Jeff Green is the man.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about it last show. I think I really like his leadership, his swag, and I think he can really help this team. But Jack, I do have a question for you, and obviously this is super early, so it's kind of just like almost an irrational question, but if you had the choice of trading for an upgrade at power forward or getting a true power forward on this team or trading for George Hill, which are you doing?
Oh, it's a good point, Nick. I don't think a true power forward is out there. You know, it's Aaron Gordon.
Well, like, okay, like an in-betweener, like a guy that can actually play power forward minutes consistently at a starting level. Like Kevin Durant obviously can, but another guy.
Look, I'm comfortable enough with Kevin Durant and Jeff Green as sort of just the wing guys and Torian Prince in the regular season to do some stuff here and there. I'm fine with that. I think that the one thing that would help the team most is a guy like George Hill, a guy who can play defense at the point of attack and on the perimeter, can be a decent enough playmaker like Spencer Dinwiddie and a serviceable enough playmaker, you know, also ease the burden of a Caris LeVert as well. I just think that he ticks a few more boxes. I think that either or, I'm not going to be unhappy with. And look, Nicholas Batum's doing some pretty awesome things with the Los Angeles Clippers right now. And I'm not saying that, you know, that could happen. But the Nets do have their mini MLE still available. That's sort of $5 million or so. You know, Trevor Ariza is still out there as well as a guy you can certainly add to the depth of the wing rotation. George Hill and Trevor Ariza, man, I'm praying and hoping that it happens, because that would solve a heap of issues and not necessarily just make it outside. Oh yeah, it's a lock now. It's a lock. The Nets still need to do a lot of things right to get to the pointy part of the season and get a lot of things sorted out. But you know, that's what I would prefer at this point in time. What about you?
Yeah, I think I'm leaning actually the other way. I think like some of that stuff can be corrected, or maybe it doesn't even necessarily have to be fixed in terms of like the secondary playmaking, especially when you get into the postseason. But I think physically at times the Nets just have some issues with some of the guys that they're playing, and Aaron Gordon could maybe help with some of the rebounding, especially just comes to mind is like Rui Hachimura, Davis Bertans, you know, Miles Bridges, PJ Washington,
John Collins.
Like he has the physicality to match up with those guys. And also has the switch ability to switch on other guys, and he can help in the rebounding department, and he also provides you an athlete. And I think like Spencer Dinwiddie not playing kind of hurts the Nets in the lack of athleticism of this team. You know what I mean? Where you're looking at great athletes on this team, it's really Jared Allen. Like Caris LeVert's a pretty good athlete, but he's not a guy that like maxed out at the combine. Nick Claxton's another great athlete, but he's not healthy right now. So I think like they're maybe missing some of that athleticism at some of the positions, especially like the role player positions. We're like OKC has a million of those super athlete guys. We're like the Nets, I think, could maybe use some of them.
Yeah, maybe Reggie Evans, bring him back. Maybe give me some Quincy Acey, Nick. You know,
I used the Quincy Acey gif the other day.
I love it. It's one of the best ones where he's just jumping up and down.
I did the 3-point dance one where he's like shooting. You know what I'm talking about?
Love that one. So look, in saying that, I think that, look, there's a lot of hyperbole and irrationality that happens after, you know, one loss or whatever. But if these issues continue to pertain themselves in 5, 10, 15 games, that's when the irrationality, you know, has more validity. But at this point in time, I think that it's nice to get it out there and, you know, throw shade at a lot of players and coaches' way. But at the end of the day, this team's in a decent enough spot. And, you know, defense, there's a lot of work that needs to be done. And, you know, I'm confident that the work can and will be done. No team is perfect in, you know, after 7 games of the season.
Yeah, look how bad the Nets were last year after 7 games. You know what I mean? Their defense was a no-show. So I feel like we really can't make solidified takes about this team and probably until almost February. You know what I mean? Or maybe 15 games into the season, something like that. So they actually can execute their schemes and what they're supposed to do. And then we actually can tell if they can do it or not. Because right now, it's a combination of lack of execution and not knowing what you need to do and lack of team cohesion. You know, across the board, there's so many other elements that really prevent us from analyzing this team in the way that we want to.
Yeah, and look, we'll continue analyzing them and probably providing too much hyperbole and irrationality, as I just alluded to. But look, I'm in a decent enough spot, and sometimes, again, this podcast, it'd be therapy sometimes for me.
Yeah. I mean, I think also it sometimes is good to analyze it. And like you said, read some of the quotes and trying to get a feel for it. But as always, Jack, a pleasure. Big thanks, everybody, for listening. And you catch us on all streaming platforms.